Welcome back to another episode of the Real Ballers Read podcast. We have a very special guest for you today in Freddie Taylor. So a little bit more about Freddie. He is a visionary entrepreneur and philanthropist, the founder and CEO of Urban Intellectuals. Spurred by the lack of Black history instruction that his sons received in grammar school, Freddie knew the onus was on him to create a new narrative of Black culture. And in 2009, Urban Intellectuals was born. Initially, Urban Intellectuals was an online hub of Black media that boasts over 1 million Facebook fans, a mobile app, and its own social media network. Today, the company has several products, including the renowned Black History flashcards. Urban Intellectuals has aggressively taken a lead role in engaging, educating, and empowering people who are curious and passionate about the African diaspora. Over 300,000 Black History flashcards have been sold and featured in Essence, HuffPost, CBS Chicago, Good Morning Washington, Milwaukee PBS, ABC News Live, and Sister Circle on TV One. Urban Intellectuals enjoyed a 2019 Black History Month collaboration with JetBlue, featuring the flashcards in the JFK New York and Newark, New Jersey airports. Additionally, Urban Intellectuals received the 2021 All Black National Convention's Black Business of the Year Award. Wow, what an intro, Freddie. It's incredible to have you here. Welcome.
Hey, thank you for having me, brothers. I really appreciate it. It's good to be here, man. Let's do it.
Yeah, happy Black History Month, for real.
Right, happy Black History Month, people. Right, that's real. That's real. Let's enjoy it this year.
That's right. And, you know, matter of fact, you probably picked the greatest book that you could have for this conversation. So do you mind getting into it? You want to share with people what you brought?
Yeah, well, the book we'll be discussing today is, you know, something that I'm supremely passionate about, and I like to say is one of the books that helped the scales fall from my eyes, you know, even though I knew things were important. But, man, the brother Carter G, he puts it like only he could put it, man, but in a simplistic manner that really kind of hits you in the face with the reality of what he's talking about. So yeah, The Miseducation of the Negro is, you know, a pretty pivotal book in my journey, and I think that everybody should read it. So I'm glad that we're discussing it today.
Yeah, let's go. All right. Yeah. You remember the first time that you read the book, or like what was the impact that it had?
Man, I'm trying to think. I must have been the late 90s. The first time that I came across the book, and I hadn't had children yet. So, you know, like the whole, oh, we need to do something wasn't really on me. And I was pretty wild. Anybody that knows me in college, right? Like I was a different person, right? Like, as you should be, right? So I went to college in 94, and man, it must have been, I went to grad school in 98, whatever, whenever I graduated on time, 4 years, right? Like, but it must have been around grad school that I started reading it. And I just remember that first chapter, to see the trouble, right? And I'm just like bam, like it just hits you like a ton of bricks. And you know, how he puts it, everything just so, he's not trying to talk over, above your head. You know, the brother's a PhD. You know, the brother is very articulate, very intelligent, but he's just giving it to you so plainly. I just feel like it just shook my soul. And, you know, it just, you just can't be different. You can't be the same after reading it. And I just know I started to evolve after that. Of course, many conversations and meeting new people in that college environment that it gives you, but man, it's just nothing like a good book to really shake your soul and wake you up. And I was glad that I read it, because it allowed me to act differently once I had children. And really knowing what my father was trying to impart with me as I was growing up, about the importance of our history and our culture, and not just readily accepting everything that the so-called educational system gives you, which, you know, of course, as a child, I thought, he was a lunatic. Like, what are you talking about? This is how you learn and grow through school. Why would they lie to me? Which, you know, turns out he was right. You know?
Wow. Wow. So you didn't realize that until you had kids yourself? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. Like I said, I had kids. My first child was born in 99, right? So I was in grad school when my wife and I had our first child. We wasn't married yet, but we got married in 01. So, so it was like right before that, right? Like, and then, you know, it's the book set in, but it don't set in, you know, and then you have the child and then you're like starting to think about all of the images and things that are coming at them. And you're like, man, you know, let me go back to this book. I've probably read it, you know, at least 5 to 10 times, you know, over the last 20 something years. Man, I can't believe I'm that old. Like, that's crazy. Wow. But that's another conversation. But, Yeah, I definitely wasn't aware a lot of this stuff before, you know, thinking about it heavily until I had the children, because everything changes once you have children.
Oh, man. Well, see, there's part of why that's incredible, though, is because this book, The Miseducation of the Negro, came out in the early 30s, right? So, I mean, what was it 60 years later that you were like, ah, this is different, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah. That's the book is also really close to me because my dad was born in 1929, right? Okay. So, and he's still alive. He's 92 years old, and we often talk about it. Like, man, it came out in like 1930, like right around the time that you were born, and it's still so prevalent today. Like, I think that's what really blows me about the book. It's like, man, all these, I mean, what are we, 90-something years later? It's still a very important book to be read. So it's just, man, it's just really incredible the insight that the brother was on. And then, you know, as I say that is really incredible that the insight Brother Woodson was on. Then I start to think, is it insight or have we not evolved as a people? And is it really like a knock against us that we haven't moved since 1930 forward, that this book, it should be irrelevant? Yeah. But it's not.
Wow.
Man, I think I got a switch now. Like, the brother is very powerful, but man, as a people, we got to get our stuff together. Because, man, there's no way a book written in 1930 should be as prevalent as it is today. We should be beyond that. Now I'm embarrassed as a people. Like, man, we got to get in.
No, like, one of his first things that he says I thought was so deep was that, like, right, like, this education system hasn't even worked for white folks, but it's like killing us. Like, it's oppressing us. So we need to go about our own program, to develop a program of our own. And that's what I love about your company, is that you've kind of done it alone, right? And you were like, you know what? We need this history. We need it to be everywhere, as many places as possible in all schools. And you kind of made that possible. So.
Yeah, you know, it's speaking in that line, it's like you say, it's failing them, you know, right. So it's destroying us. Right. And I was having a discussion. I've been, it's Black History Month, right? I'm on, right? It's time for me to talk everywhere. But one of my messages is, right, we are complicit in our demise, right? Like, we are allowing our children to be miseducated. And we're regurgitating these lies and this suppression and the destruction of our children's confidence and feelings and insight and how they view themselves and the destruction in the community. It's really our fault. You know, so like a lot of what we talk about inside the company and you know, the mission and everything is really like, you got to step up, you know, as a people, as parents, as community members, as friends. Like, why are we allowing this to happen? Like, we literally have a choice, right? And like, we just act like passive prisoners in this ride of miseducation as if this is our birthright, and it's not. And we don't have to do that. So our company tries to shake the shoulders of Black parents and white parents that have Black children or grandchildren, to shake their shoulders so that they don't continue to pass this miseducation along. But it's almost like we love it, you know, and that's really a credit to the system that was set up to oppress you, because they did a great job and they're doing a fantastic job of getting us to it, not only accept our oppression, but to propel it in future generations by allowing this madness to be taught. And I was speaking yesterday. I talk a lot, brother. You don't have to cut me off.
One take.
I was speaking yesterday to a K through three. I was speaking to kindergartners and to third graders. Mm-hmm. And like, I'm really telling them the most important thing that you can learn is self-confidence. Like, mm-hmm. I want you to get the understanding and this and that. But the truth of the matter is, if you're self-confident, then you can go learn anything, especially in the age of information. You got one of these. There's no excuses. You can learn anything. Yeah. And you just got to have a confidence that you can learn anything, that you want to learn something, and you're not going to let nobody stop you. And that really comes from understanding your history and your culture. There's mad research out there that just shows people who know their history and their culture, they act differently. They avoid the school to prison pipeline. They excel educationally. They excel in their families, being good parents. They excel being good friends, community members, volunteers, givers of the community. It's like everything you want in a person, but it all starts with knowing their history and their culture. And for some reason, we just perpetuate lies as if somebody's going to wake up one day at 35 and realize, oh, we dope people. I should be loving on my people, right? Like, that's not going to happen. We got to teach the babies. So I tried to go out of my way to get in front of children and just tell them the truth, you know. Mm. Black women started mathematics. They almost fell out their chair. Where did you get that from? How would you know something like that? Just the facts. Like, women started mathematics 35,000 years ago. This is just facts. Wow. Like, I'm not making things up. We don't got to make things up. We got the greatest story never told. But we won't tell it. We allow other people to control the narrative. Keep us in that first chapter, the seat of trouble. We voluntarily set our children in it and perpetuate the lies that's being told to them. And then when they grow up, we act funny. Like, I don't know why he don't know his history and his culture. You ain't tell it to him. You fed them lies their whole life. All right, I'm slow down, man.
Man.
I get fired up.
That was some of the realest stuff. Like, how do we, teach that love of culture? Because, that self-confidence comes from, being like, yo, we are special. But do we just need to start teaching that from kindergarten on? And we really just need our own schools for us by us, right? But politically, what have been the roadblocks that you've seen even in your own company, in doing the work that you've been doing, trying to teach that, right? It's are folks trying to push back against that for the earlier years or?
Yeah, nobody has a problem with this until Black people start having this conversation, right? Because Jewish people have been doing it since they got here. Yep. You know, German people, Russian people, all these other ethnicities have Saturday schools where they teach their history, their culture, they speak their language. They know the importance of this. Every single one of them, but us. And then when we start to talk about it and start to say, hey, you know what? It's really important that we understand our history and our culture as children so that we grow up in understanding. Then you see all the pushback. Everybody comes and be like, whoa. No, you need to understand everybody's history. Everybody's important. All lives matter. What are you talking about? You just need to understand Black and African culture and history. What are y'all doing? Everybody needs to know. No. We just want to do what y'all doing. That's it. We just want to do what y'all are doing. Little white boys grow up. Little white girls grow up. They don't need Saturday school. They get their history and their culture Monday through Friday. So I understand why you don't have one. But little Jewish kids have Saturday school. Little Russian kids have Saturday school. Why are they doing that? It's critical to the fabric of who they are. We acting like our oppressor. Say that this is ignorant. Why would we do that? That creates more division. Everybody comes in and tries to stop us from uniting because they know the history of the planet and what we do when we unite, right? It's a long, glorious history, tens of thousands of years of it out there on what we do when we unite. That's why they stopping us. But it baffles me. It baffles me that adults of the community fight against us. So we got this thing. I always say European framing, right? They put these glasses on your face so that you see the world from a Eurocentric standpoint. And because you do that, you speak their advancement. You speak their history, their culture. You see the world through their lens. You don't see it through ours. So we encourage people to take those glasses off and start to see it from an Afrocentric viewpoint so that you can start to be of service to your people, right? Brother Woodson always talks about being, education is cool, but if you're not of service to your people, you're a detriment. You could be as smart as you want to be, but get away from me if you don't want to be of service to your people because you're useless, right? And that's what he was really about. And this is what we're talking about. When you got those glasses on, you're not of service to your people because you're speaking from another culture's perspective and you have no interest in yourself because you don't even value yourself. You think you one of them, right? So we are miseducating our people into those frames and I'm just trying to crush them. Like, we just need to crush them so that you just start working together. We don't gotta be violent. We don't gotta beg nobody to come and save us. They're not coming anyway. You know, all we gotta do is start breathing life into our children by telling them the truth of who they are, getting them to accept their history and their culture, and they will create the future. Like Pac said, I might not be the one that sparks the revolution, but I might
inspire the revolution.
Inspire the individual that does. There we go. Exactly. Come on, give me this early.
No, that's the perfect quote to use there. Definitely seems like you've internalized this book after all these readings, man. It's really powerful. What do you think of his critique of like the Black intellectual class and like, do you think it fits in today's day and age that they've kind of neglected Black people?
Yeah. Who was I just listening to that modernized the really his talk? But I think he nailed it. Man, I think he nailed every single chapter. I think the brother is incredible. And I'm not just saying that because he's a cute. I'm a cute too. but I just think he really nailed it. The Black intellectual class sometimes is the worst. I mean, I'm technically in that class, you know, because I have a master's degree. I graduated in 2000 with my master's degree. When you have to actually go to class and defend your thoughts and ideas, that's another discussion, right? Because I think it creates a different type of intellect when you have to sit in front of people who are being graded on their critique of your work. It's different than just writing papers and operating on the internet. But again, that's another conversation. I'm an intellectual. I love education. Like Dead Prez say, I love education. But if education ain't elevating me to get us out some BS, you know, then there's a different finger. Education, you know. But this is what I think the Black bourgeoisie has gotten into. You know what I mean? The Black intelligentsia. You know, their mental masturbation, being smart for the sake of being smart, right? And that's why, again, I was talking about Dr. Woodson on why I appreciate him, because he's clearly an intelligent, articulate brother, but he wrote this at like probably a third grade level. Like, it's, I mean, he did not try to impress you with words at all. He just gave it to you straight. But I think that the Black intelligentsia still operates in mental masturbation. You know, I just really patting themselves on their backs for their limited success, acting like they done did something, but really acting as a barrier between the masses of us getting together and really doing the bidding of our oppressors. But again, they've been educated with these frames on, right? So they see the world from their perspective, the European perspective, and they act as if they are Black and they have our best interests at heart, but they don't. If they did, they would just tell the truth in education. Mm-hmm. Then it would raise up children to think differently, and it wouldn't be woke. Oh, you're over here way too woke this morning. Why wouldn't you want to wake up? Why you want to sleep through life? Like, that insult drives me crazy. Because why wouldn't you want to wake up? You sleepwalking through life. Why wouldn't you want to wake up? How is that an insult? That you know too much information. But this comes from people who have lenses on and they aren't necessarily advancing the best well-being of us as a people across the globe. right? Mm-hmm. But they have no interest in it because they got their crumbs from a society that's had their foot on our neck. And they're afraid if they take their foot, if they help get the foot off the neck, they wouldn't have their crumbs any longer. Mm-hmm. I mean, again, Dr. Woodson killed it, man. Like,
yeah, no, and the one point that he had about the black bourgeoisie that I thought was like scarily accurate in terms of now was he basically said on one hand, they try to make, you know, black businesses seem like they're not worth anything, that they don't really have the skills and training, so they don't even invest in them. But then on the other hand, right, they're like saying that like the only thing that will take us out of our predicament is like socialism, and like we shouldn't even pursue business at all, like capitalism's fraud, but they're the ones still with the money that, you know, pursued capitalism, and but are just trying to kind of put down the rest of folks that are, you know, trying to make their way in it. So what do you, as a business owner yourself, you know, think of that comment, and do you, you know, have a side in that argument?
Yeah, man, I try not to get into the political, you know, discussions, because it's just, I mean, at this point in my life, I've been knee deep in it. I've stayed all the way out of it. I've been kind of toeing the line. But now I just see it's really just a wasted discussion, because at the end of the day, we got to do for us. Like, there's nobody coming to save us, right? Like, people, I mean, we waiting on Jesus. I don't know if Jesus is coming. Let's do some work in the meantime, right? Like, in the meantime, in the between time, let's do what we already know is necessary. We need to come together, educate our children. We need to create jobs and opportunities for ourselves. We need to create programs in our community for us, by us, that's funded by us. Because if you keep taking funding from other institutions, they just hold that as bait, and then they start to control you. It's just, it's the same. It's like we just own a hamster wheel, and we just keep playing the same game. And I just, for the life of me, I can't understand it until I realize they don't want to understand. There's people that's, you know, controlling our narrative that don't want you to get it. Yeah. That's the whole point. The whole point is the misdirection and the miseducation. So I try to just stay out of it, man. I know it's not serving us either way. Either ideology has oppressed us over time, whether you capitalist, you a socialist, they all controlled by the folks with money, and they just been dangling carrots and just moving us however they want us to move. And we're so emotional as a people. Yeah. We're just easily manipulated, and it's just, you know, it really makes me sick. It's like with knowledge comes a illness, like as you just get sick because you just like,
why
the same play, like what are we doing? All this intelligence, right? All these intellectuals in our community, and you don't see what's happening. You got to be a part of it. You got to be willingly being a part of
it. And that is such a great comment, because like I think part of the difficulty with like even like black Twitter culture, it feels too much of like trying to critique and tear down, and so sometimes in like very funny ways. Yeah. But like, right, when everyone's spending their energy critiquing and tearing down stuff, they're not spending that same time building stuff. And like, I think like true intelligence should be measured by what you try and put out in the world and create, and not just by what you're shutting down like 24/7 with takes on like Twitter. Cause I'm just like, yo, like, what are you actually doing? Like you've told me no in 20,000 different ways, but I don't even still know what you believe in.
I mean, you're hitting on something big, cause that's what the culture is. People get popular and get big by tearing folks down rather than building up intelligent conversations that we need to have. Like, imagine if this book dropped in 2020. They'd have roasted it. It wouldn't have got out. They would have clowned him at every single page, every single turn. This would have never got out. They would have destroyed this book. And the only reason that it lives is because it was written over 100 years ago. Or close enough, right? Almost 100 years ago. That's the only reason it lives. In this era, you can't be intellectual. You can't come out and say how you feel and what you think it should be right, because Black Twitter, everybody gonna roast you, right? They gonna use their platform to be funny and just to tear you up. Malcolm X wouldn't. You can't survive in this era. Too many people got a microphone that shouldn't, right? They shouldn't. But it's again a brilliant move of your oppressor, right? To create this and to give voice to the ignorant, right? Even the intellectually ignorant. I've seen some, very articulate responses to things, and you're like, wow, this person is gifted with language, but they stupid for tearing down this beautiful idea that could actually help us. Right. Like, how does Martin Luther King come up in this era? What? You can't. There's no, I saw somebody say, there's no Black leadership. When you tear everybody down, that start having decent ideas because they wear purple and yellow together or whatever. Mm. Like, I mean, for whatever reason, we just allow ignorant folks to have a voice, and I don't think they should have a voice. This is why I like The Nation, because they just shut everybody out. They not listening to that. They just doing their own thing, and you can see the fruits of their labor. I'm not in The Nation. I just respect it, because it's the only organization that's moving and fighting and building for our people, and folks still talk crazy about them, but they got farms. They got transportation companies. They got manufacturing facilities. They got schools. They got retail institutions. They got social outreach programs. They doing what we should be doing, but we's too busy talking.
I didn't even know that.
Yeah, right. I didn't
know that. Oh, man.
Farrakhan all day. Yeah.
They serious about this independence and this self-movement. Like what Garvey was talking about, like what everybody be yapping about, they're the only institution that's doing it. I appreciate Jesse Jackson and Rainbow Push and for what they're doing, because in 100 years, that organization is going to be here, right? A lot of us just talk, but he's built an institution. But he ain't got no farms. He ain't feeding his people. He ain't got no transportation companies. He ain't got no vertically integrated organization that don't need nobody else. We just out here depending on our oppressor talking bad about them. You're gonna come up short in that equation, right? So that's the only organization that's withstanding all of the social pressures, and they're putting it on. If you get out talking about Farrakhan, they'll shut you down on platforms, right? Like, wow, but they ain't stopping. Like, they can't do nothing about them because they're not dependent on anybody else. I love the Black Greek letter organizations and what they do, but they take white money. So when it comes to real issues, they gotta be silent. And it drives me crazy as a member, as a paying member. It drives me crazy because you take that money, there's certain things you can't say no longer, or else they gonna take that funding back. So that's why they went silent on a lot of the issues. Don't wear your letters when you out there protesting. Don't do that. Because white daddy don't like when you talk like that. He gonna pull that funding. Man, we smart dummies, man. We smart dummies. We know stuff, but we don't know what we need to know. And we can't articulate it in a plain and simple fashion anymore, because if you don't talk intelligent, then they gonna rip you apart on Black Twitter. But if you talk intelligent, they gonna rip you apart on Black Twitter. It's like, how do you break through the noise and really start to impact and help your people? You just gotta start talking to the babies and stop talking to them. Like, so that's like why our work just focuses, I ain't gonna say it just focuses on the children, but that's why we focus on the children. You know, we just need to get them right. Then they can tune that noise out as they grow up. They know that that's noise, and they can know what they need to do.
Yeah.
But we lost as a people, man. It's,
Well, is this where your the Black History flashcards come in too? I mean, like, were you putting your kids onto them? Like, how are they responding to them? What's like the story there, right? Because of course, Carter G he started Black History Week, right? And that's why we're here now, being able to talk about him. And so, the flashcards are very much kind of like in that lineage as well.
Yeah, the flashcards came because these are things that I wish I would have had when my children were younger, right? So my first child was born in 99. My second was born in 03. Mm. I'm still young dad trying to figure it out and really doing what my daddy did, talking to me ad nauseum about Black history, right? Like just 2 hours, you know, like driving them crazy, really. And then as they, you know, got older, you know, they're 18 and 22 now. So when I started the flashcards in 2017, everything that Urban Intellectuals is doing now is the stuff I wish I would have had then. Because if I would have had something simple like a deck of flashcards with a few bullet pointed information, then I could have went through one per day with them instead of trying to talk to them 2 hours and just boring them to tears, right? And they're not listening anyway. So really everything that you see inside the organization is kind of what I wish I would have had. So now we're supplying the things for parents that they can have those things, right? We got a mantra inside the Sankofa Club, which is basically our Black History Club for children, where we have teachers doing live teaching on Black history 2 days a week. And we got, you know, archived hundreds of lessons archived inside of them for any members inside the Sankofa Club. But one of our mantras in there is 5 minutes a day keeps the miseducation away. 5 minutes a day. So I'm just trying to remove all of the excuses for parents. I don't got time. I'm too busy. I mean, you know, where should I start? The history is so deep or so much. I'm working 2 jobs trying to keep food on the table. You ain't got 5 minutes? You got 5 minutes. You watch all those shows, don't you? You go get your hair done for 2 hours, don't you? You go to the bowling alley for 4 hours, don't you? You go hang out at the bar with the fellas, don't you? You ain't got 5 minutes for your kids? 5 minutes a day keeps the miseducation away. So now you can just use our products in just short bursts of information, but it's really consistency that makes the difference, not longevity and hours spent in front of them. It's just being consistent. And you find that once you're consistent with it, the children will start to ask you, hey, it's 7 o'clock. Aren't we supposed to get our 5 minutes in? And then that 5 minutes turn to 10 and 20 anyway, because they're learning about people that look like them, that come from places they come from, and they're inspired. It turns out children like to be inspired. I mean, go figure. You know, they love that. That's amazing to me. It's like magic, right? Yeah, so that's kind of like where it really came from. These are the things that I really wish I would have had and the things I wish I would have done. So I always say I made the mistakes already. So let me provide the solution for you. Mm-hmm. Mm. Yeah, I told y'all got to jump in, brother. I get
fired. Absolutely perfect.
It's genuinely my passion, though. It's like, this is the other
flashcards that I saw that you had that I really, really liked, too, were just the conversational ones that asked, like, a question. So to ask you a question back from one of those cards, what is the best Black movie of all time?
Oh man, those questions are tough.
I gotta ask him that.
I like to cheat, so all right, I'm gonna cheat. I'm not gonna actually give you a movie. I'm gonna give you a documentary, right? Great and Mighty Walk, right, by this brother, John Henry Clark. A Great and Mighty Walk is 90 minutes of real history. And it's on YouTube. You can get it for free. But when people tell me, I don't know about my history, I don't know where to start, and this and that, I always say Google or YouTube A Great and Mighty Walk. It's narrated by Wesley Snipes. It is the most powerful piece that I've ever seen as far as like getting a great thorough introduction of our history and culture. Because Dr. Clark always says, see, now you got me fired up on my man. This is my dude right here. But Dr. Clark always said, most of y'all are dewy-eyed over religion. You get all, you know, y'all in your feelings over Jesus and he coming to save you. But what you really need is straight history. You don't need to know the history of the Bible. You need to know the history of the planet. You need to know what has transpired, because once you understand, it changes you forever. And he does a great job in 90 minutes of giving you a nice overview. And one of his quotes, I believe it's in there, is You should never discuss a situation until you understand how it came to be. Mm. Because you can end up arguing for people that's really trying to destroy you. So that's why when you come into a situation, you need to stand back first before you say, wait, y'all shouldn't, no, we shouldn't be doing this. And you just talking, you need to be quiet and figure out what transpired before this moment. How did we get here? Let me go back and analyze and figure out what happened. Because you need, that's very important. And this is not what we do in today's politics, right? We jump in, Democrats, we're Democratic, we need to do this and that. But you need to back up a couple of thousand years and really figure out how did this moment come to be? Because once you figure it out, I promise you, you won't be out here talking about Democrat and Republican, because that shit don't matter. It's irrelevant, right? It's something bigger at play, but they got you arguing over stuff that don't matter. You won't understand what has happened on the planet. Mm-hmm. And I love him because he recommends a book. Y'all readers, I can see the book. It's right here. The Outline of History by H.G. Wells. It's about this thick. But he's like, you need to understand straight history. And he recommends it because it's written by a white boy. But the white boy gives you straight history. What has happened on the planet? No feelings, no European greatness and the Greeks and like none of that. Just what has transpired on the planet. You need to understand this because everything we're talking about is a result of this. So anyway, I cheated on the movie.
That's the best answer possible. No, I have a very good friend. Shout out to Ebby, who put me onto John Henry Clark years ago. And has always been sending me stuff that he's written and said. And the first time I saw one of his speeches, he was like blind, I think, by that point. But he's the most powerful speaker. Like you just something about the dude's voice, man, is another level. His intelligence and knowledge is there, but he has just a way of giving it. He's just a master teacher, man. So I gotta check out that movie, seriously.
Yeah, man. I went down the YouTube rabbit hole from about about 04 to about 08, 09. I'm talking about like deep in the rabbit hole. Like, man, Asra Kwesi. Like, man, I'm just absorbing everything. This is really kind of where my metamorphosis kind of started to really happen, and just really the scales just continue to fall from my eyes and stop seeing, you know, the pursuit of money, women, and blah blah, you know, and the trappings of wealth, right? Clothing and, you know, pop my collar and bottles and all of that. Like when all of that kind of dissipated from my being, really came from listening to brothers like that, you know, really, really digging into our history and our culture. And understanding that there's a bigger, something bigger is at play here. You know, you're naturally chasing these things because that's what they've been instilling in you, you know, on purpose. Somebody has been working very diligently to get you to follow this madness. And they've done a great job at it, right? You just kind of got to tip your hat to them once you come out of that matrix. But yeah, that's definitely one of the brothers that woke me all the way up. I think Carter he started it. You know, I feel like Dr. Clark, like really, I mean, you cannot listen to that brother and be the same. Like you say, he had that, I think he had glaucoma. And I say, ooh, when he closed his eyes, it's going down, boy. Yeah, you about to get it. You about to get it, man. I love it. I'm about to turn on some Dr. Clark today, man. You got to be fired up.
What do you think is the most neglected period of history for Black people?
Ooh, that's pretty easily. Mm. The period right before colonization. In fact, I'll say really like, man, everything before 1600, right? 1700, really, because we had great civilizations on this planet right before then. And like one of the things that I tell people and the children is there's no such thing as slaves. Like they got you out here thinking you the descendant of slaves. That's a garbage term. There was no slaves. Ain't nobody come and snatch no slaves. They came and stole doctors. They stole engineers. They stole architects. They stole agriculturalists. They stole scientists. They stole grandmothers. They stole grandfathers and uncles and nieces. They steal no damn slaves. How you think they came over here and was able to till the land and toil the soil and build buildings and erect Washington, D.C.? You think they was ignorant people? It was not ignorant people. They stole intelligent people. They didn't steal no damn slave. They enslaved the people. That's what happened. So what was going on before? Again, Dr. Clark never discussed the situation. You understand how it came to be. What was going on right before colonization? Turns out we got all types of civilizations, not only all over Africa, all over the planet. Nobody talks about it. But they just tell the children, oh, there was slavery then Barack Obama. Y'all dope. Man, Barack Obama is so dope. He's such a dope individual, isn't he? Turns out you always rule nations. He ain't no first, and he ain't impressive. Actually, he's a step down from where you've been. But they got you looking up at it like it's something impressive. Hey, give him his props for rising to the top of his profession. He's a professional. He's just a politician.
Yep.
You've been ruling nations. What? You've been ruling nations on this continent. The Folsom people go back 14,000 years right here in the United States. No conversation about them. No conversation. None. Zero. Let's not talk about that. But I've traveled, right? And I love, this is how I drive this point home. The Moors. I love the Moors, right? The Moors ruled Northern Africa, the so-called Middle East, on into Asia, Middle and Southern Europe for 800 years, 711 AD, and particularly in Europe, I'm talking about Europe, 711 AD into 1491. Isn't that a peculiar year, 1491? I wonder what happened in 1491. Turns out my dad and I goes to Spain, Southern Spain, visits Granada. Granada is the home of the Alhambra. The Alhambra is the last Moorish fort in Europe, in Southern Europe. It's in Southern Spain, Granada, right? Granada, Seville, all of that has got deep black history still there. We go visit the Alhambra. You walking around this place. It's 3.5 miles is the tour inside of this place up on this mountain, basically, right? You go, it's beautiful. I got to share the pictures with you. I was there. I seen it with my own eyes. It's built by black people in the ninth century, right? And it's still standing. But in 1491, they lost the war. And you're familiar with this place. You just don't know what it is because they don't tell you the truth. And I'll explain it to you like this. As soon as I started, you're going to know. King Ferdinand, Princess Isabella got together and Christian Christopher Columbus to sail west from the Alhambra.
Oh, wow.
They finally overthrow the Moors there at that. That was their last fort. They pushed them down southern from Europe, down, down, down. This is the last spot. Bang. They got in the story. That's what they tell you. Columbus sails west with what? His madness. That's what happened. You lost the war. The last army that you had that was really defending Africa for, listen to this statement. White folks been trying to get in to take over Africa ever since they was found on the planet. Ever since they was found on the planet. They tell you, the Bible tells you people 6,000 years old. No, that's when white folks was found. We got history that go back tens of thousands of years. So who you talking? You're not talking about us. We've been here for a long, long time. We've been here for hundreds of thousands of years, but that's a conversation you can't even have today. You can't even have that conversation. People's minds, it just, so I just leave it at tens of thousands of years because we know that mathematics is at least 35,000 years old because black women discovered it. right? They brought it to the world. These are just facts. This is already out here. So how people 5,000-6,000 years old? Oh no, white people 5,000-6,000 years old, right? But ever since they've been discovered on the planet, they've been trying to crack Africa. They finally cracked. They finally cracked in 1491 when they finally got rid of the last stronghold in the continent. And then the Arabs, everybody came in. They was all trying to come in and penetrate the wealth of the world, right? It's all centered in Africa. It's still there, right? It was the intellectual center of the world. It still is, right? All the universities, people used to traverse the world to come and learn at the feet of Africans. Like nothing is new. But all that period right before then, learning about, we talk about Mansa Musa. Oh, Mansa Musa, one of the richest people on the planet, West Mali Empire, this and that. Mali Empire. You think he just lucked up and got that money? What do you think he was doing? There was a whole civilization built around what he was on. He wasn't just one rich dude. He was just a lineage of an empire in Western Africa. The Ashanti people, they've been, where do you think this stuff comes from? Like, this is why I look at intelligent black people kind of funny. Because I'm like, you're just perpetuating lies because it serves you. But that's the period that we missing. So when I talk to children, I tell them, hey, what do you think was happening before the slave trade? Like, what do you think was going on? Let's talk about it. Let's get into it. Let's talk about Songhay. Right? Let's talk about these empires that existed. Didn't nobody steal no damn slaves? Mm-hmm. They didn't steal no damn slaves. We lost the war. Yep. This is something we don't like to talk about. We lost. We lost. That's how your people got enslaved. That's what happened. Mm-hmm. Like, that's just the facts. It hurts. We lost, man. But like Dr. Clark said, by the time white folks was discovered on the planet, we was old and tired. Right? Like we had been ruling for so long. We were just, we got sloppy, you know, but you got to know the story, right? That's really what he goes into. I'm man, telling y'all, you got to stop me. I just get going.
Ah, nah, that was something. I mean, even in my own blind spots though. Yeah. Pre-slavery, man. It's kind of just, I don't know. You know, I really got to study. I've had this book on my shelf for a year.
Ivan Van Sertima.
Sertima. So yeah, like I really gotta crack into this history because.
Oh, if you ain't read that, yeah, get that. Cause that's gonna give you the Olmecs and that's gonna give you the Central American culture, the Mexican culture, all of that pre white folks coming over here and then mixing them and creating the Mexicans, right? Cause they was people, I'm telling you, man. It's very interesting. But our fourth deck of our Black History flashcards is before 1492. So it literally starts 35,000 years ago with the Lumbombo bone and the discovery of mathematics. And it comes up to 1492 because we have no idea about this period. They just gloss over it and then be like, you the Greeks, you know, that's important people. And then the Romans, and then they just skip to Columbus and the slave trade. What are they skipping? Why are they skipping? Why aren't you going through the details like you do during those periods, right? Because they're framing your thoughts. They're getting you to see it from their perspective and make you see them as the pinnacle of the world. Because if you take them off, you find out, man, they insignificant on this planet. Like you're tens of thousands of years of documented history of people that look like you and me that are doing the most amazing things the world has ever seen. But you can't tell that to little black kids. They might try to do it themselves. Right? It's just a devious plan and we are complicit in it. And I don't know. I mean, I know why some people are complicit, but I think the rest of us just got these blinders on. And you don't even feel like it's important, right? Because nobody, why is history important? That's whatever. That's just for those historians to talk about and mental masturbation. Like, no, this stuff is life-changing. It's life-changing information, right? It's like reading this book. It's life-changing.
Right.
When you get to talking about the pastors and the preachers, man, I don't know where y'all religion lies, but, you know, mine lies outside of thorough dedication to a book and a Bible. I like practice over anything, right? So, but when he starts talking about the, like that, I was into the church at the time when I was reading it. And it was like, damn, like a kick in the gut, you know, like, wow. And then like, if you're honest, like Dr. Clark say, as long as you're not dewy-eyed over what it's supposed to mean, and you can just look and be honest, you got to be like, damn, he right. You know, like they're just exploiting us. Well, you don't need no relationship with a pastor to talk to God. Like, stop it. Like, stop it. That's ridiculous. It's ridiculous. It's ridiculous, right? It's actually ridiculous. Most people can't say that. I can't, because I don't have no air. I don't got no, you don't got to believe me. You know what I mean? I feel like it's ridiculous. You can't tell me how I feel. That's how I feel. Oh, Daddy, Freddie, you going to go to hell. I'm living in it. I was in the dungeons in Ghana. I was in the dungeons. I seen what hell looked like. I was experienced it. When all the tour guide left, I stayed back. I had the feeling that had to be, if that ain't hell, boy, I don't know what it is. You going to tell me I'm going to die and then I'm going to experience something in the afterlife? How you know? I ain't never met nobody that died and came back. They say Jesus died and came back. I wasn't there. I don't know. You got to have faith, Freddie. You're supposed to believe. That don't rock well with me, because if that was supposed to be the thing, God would have just gave me that believe gene. And for some reason, God decided I'm supposed to have this thinking gene. So I don't know. Like, I'm a rock with what God gave me, not what you tell me God's supposed to give me. That's just how I am. But I stood in those dungeons. I can't imagine living through that. I can't imagine going through those gates of no return that I saw, 20 feet of sand, and then the ocean is right there. I can't imagine getting on that boat. You can't tell me that ain't hell. And then while you in the dungeon, you find out, you go later in the tour, you end up upstairs and the church is above the dungeon. And then we went to a different slave castle and it was set up the same way. The church was above the dungeon. What type of satanic ritual is going on? And this is what you want me to believe in from these people? I ain't going. I don't know. And that's probably a little too much. You can edit that out, brother, if you want to. I ain't going. I seen it.
Yeah.
It's man, it changes you. If you ain't never been there, it changes you. You got to go over there.
I got to go.
Yeah, we haven't been. You haven't been.
Oh, you got to go, brothers. It changes you. And then to hear the stories from their perspective, because they tell you that Africans don't like you. They don't like you. They think y'all think y'all better than them. They just trying to keep division amongst us. So when you go over there, like when I was in Ghana, you go over there and start talking to the brothers. It's cool and it's foul. It's cool because they speak English. And actually, English is the first language of Ghana, right? It's foul because English is the first language of Ghana. How in the hell English is the first language of Ghana? What? Oh, that's right. Y'all was over here dominating the people and you made it the first language. So they all speak English. So it's cool that I could communicate. But then you start to find out, if they speak the language, what else did they control? The educational system. So the same miseducation they was putting on us, they over there putting on them. It's the same thing. Ghana just became a country in 1957. I got brothers older than that. You know what I'm saying? Like, it just became a country. And you over there talking to them and you started to put the pieces together and you like, man, somebody been working us from both angles and they've been using religion, they've been using power, they've been using education, they've been using the media, all to just work us from different angles. It's crazy. But we got to go tie the knot. We're a global people, man. We got to get back to that. Mm-hmm. I don't even know how I got there, but I just get going, man. Like, I get fired.
Jen, you have to tell about the DNA test, man.
Yeah. Well, we just, got African ancestry, the DNA testing. Because last Black History Month, we did like a Know Your Roots project where we were, you know, learning about, you know, artists, activists of Black history for the first time. And it was incredible. And, you know, this time, I think we just really wanted to get even more specific just on our own like family lineage. It's always been something that I've been really curious about. And yeah, so I mean, I just mailed off the samples yesterday. Okay. Yep.
Okay, congratulations on that.
That's no, we'll see. Cool. We'll see how it comes back.
Yeah. I've done them. I actually know Gina, who's the co-founder of Ancestry. We was in the same mastermind together.
Oh, that's for real.
Super dope sister, man. Wow. Yeah. So I've done it. Through my mom's side, we are Mende. So we're the Mende people out of Sierra Leone.
Yeah.
And then through my father's side, we are Yoruba out of Nigeria.
Right.
You know, but here we go again. These people had their own civilization. So wherever you find out, right before we got snatched, there was a whole civilization going on. Like the Mende people is a whole thing. Yep. The Yoruba people is a whole thing. They got a long story history that's going on, right? People ain't never been no slaves, right? They snatched us, you know, and they did us in. They did us dirty, right? But we got to know that. So I'm excited for you, brother. It's
thanks.
It's eye opening. So you did the through your mom? What do they call it?
I did mom and dad.
Mom and dad.
Yeah.
So are your parents alive?
Yeah.
You should do your father and let him do his matriarchal side.
Oh, I see. Yeah.
This is why I know. This is why I know because I swabbed my parents. I had swabbed them.
Right.
So it could do their matriarch because I'm sure she explained to you that you know your father's side might come back a little different, right? Yeah. Because you know, just the reality of the situation, it was white men raping black women. You know what I mean? Like that's really what transpired. So. But if you swab your dad, then you can take his mom's side and find out. That's why I know we're Yoruba from that side of the family.
Right.
I didn't do myself and, you know, do my father's father.
Right? I see. Right. Yeah.
We might end up.
Yeah.
I got green eyes, brother. We might end up. No. It's an exciting adventure, though, man. I'm excited for you. I love to hear where you're from, and definitely connect with the community. And you know, Gina's working on allowing people to get dual citizenship in their countries of origin.
That's fire.
No, that's so. Awesome. A couple of people from Sierra Leone, they went on that inaugural trip with her, and now they're dual citizens in Sierra Leone with her. I know that's the country that she has locked down. If you're from there, you can get it. I plan on getting mine this year. I'm really excited about it because money in America is getting dual citizenship other places. I think they're trying to tell us something. You know, you should probably listen. So, you know, I'm anxious to live somewhere else anyway. So that's my thing.
Other than your traveling to Ghana, like you were saying, are there other places that you've been to and really enjoyed?
Morocco. I've been to Morocco, but again, I was tracing the Moorish history, right? So you get over there, and it's so many like murals of black people over there today. Is you would be like, what? Now you don't see none of the black people, by the way. You just see the Arabs over there, right? But it's like, man, they still honoring who dominated the area. It was so interesting. I wasn't there enough time to get. We're everywhere, but we're just marginalized, right? Like we're pushed to the margins. So I didn't get a chance to go into those areas of where we were at. I was in Marrakesh, but it was pretty interesting. Those are the only two African countries that I've been to so far, Ghana and Morocco. But this year I'll be going to Egypt. We're actually doing African Black History travel experiences now in Urban Intellectuals.
Let's go.
Taking our first group to Egypt this year in October. So I'm really excited about that because I got to go see these pyramids. You know, I got to go see this history. Then we got like a 3-day cruise down the Nile. It's just insane. This is going to be.
Wait, what? I'm
super excited about that.
What from the U.S. that we've built is going to last that long? Nothing.
No.
Everything's going to be ruins. Like the monument. Everything in DC was not built like that.
No.
I'm really trying to think though. I'm really trying to think because like it's not even close. Like how long the pyramids have lasted. Like
yeah,
that architectural feat. Like that. That's like a peak humanity
definitely.
Honestly, how long did it lasted? Like
yeah, I mean, it's insane, right? And then look, like all right, I'll be beating this drum, but. Pythagoras' theorem, right? The mm-hmm. Greeks started mathematics. How the hell the how the hell the Greeks started mathematics when the pyramids was built on a squared plus b squared plus c squared thousands of years before Pythagoras was born? But yeah. We still teach our children the Greeks started mathematics.
No, they all stole.
Oh, got it.
Yeah, but even when you read Greek history, they tell you they sat at the feet of the African. Like they tell you they weren't lying about it. It's today because they're putting these glasses on us, right? They want us all to see the world from their perspective, their made up perspective, actually. Mm. But man, I can't wait to go see the pyramids for myself. That's going to be incredible.
I love this metaphor of the Eurocentric glasses too, because my brother and I were talking last week or a couple of weeks ago about Malcolm X and his autobiography, because it seemed like people all have like personal testimonies of the first time that they read it. And now I realize from that metaphor, it's because he's the first person that is willing to take those glasses off. And he talks about his own education through taking those glasses off. Mm-hmm. And right, like you're like, oh, snap, like this is different than what I've learned. And so that moment when you first read that book feels very revelationary in that way, because it's like, wow, this is totally different than school.
I didn't read that book until, man, it must have been like 2012, 13, 14, like late in my development. Like I should have read it. Most people just assumed I had read it. I didn't, you know, for whatever reason. But man, wow, yeah, it's such a powerful book. I can see it right now on my shelf right there. Such a powerful book. Great read. I made my children read it. So that was important for me to get them to get it. But I love that you brothers are, you know, pushing the reading narrative. You know, I graduated with my MBA in 2000. And starting about 2001, I would say 2002, I've read a minimum of 24 books a year ever since then. Like that's my base pace. I've gotten up to 50. That was insane. That was just way too much. Like I think I just OD'd on information. But you know, I realized that, you know, it's fundamental, right? Reading is fundamental. So I just really love that y'all are pushing that narrative. And a lot of people ask me, you know, how did you get here? How did you learn all this stuff? I'm like, I mean, I was dedicated to reading, but I know that if you read 25 pages a day, 5 days a week, that pays to get you 24 books a year. That's 2 books a month.
Yep.
I mean, you just got to be dedicated, right? And I'm a slow reader. So I tell, don't be making no excuses because I'm a slow reader. Mm-hmm. Somebody can read that in 15 minutes. It's going to take me 40, mm-hmm. 45, depending on the book, right? It might even be longer to get those 25 pages. And sometimes I got to break it up. I got to read 10 in the middle of the day or morning, 10 in the middle, 10, you know, I really, you know, but it's just about being dedicated. And now you got audio books. Now you can just cheat, you know, like for the longest, I wouldn't listen to audio books because I like.
Convenient though.
I gave up on that.
Yeah.
Yeah. I take them down now, but I still like to flick the pages, you know, and I like to own the book. You know, I want to build a library. That's what I'm working on. So.
All right.
Nah, man, as like media and social media and our phones get more immersive and addicting, like reading is only going to be more important, right? Because it's like that knowledge, right? And this goes back to our Twitter convo. Folks are talking around ideas. They're like saying that they know things, but they haven't even read the book. Like a lot of the folks that, you know, even say they're communists, I bet haven't read Marx, like honestly, and that's the same for a lot of fundamental books. I mean, a lot of Christians haven't read the Bible even, you know.
It's like, they don't read the memes about it. Funk Street to me, man. I swear they know some stuff.
So what is the rest of your plan, though, for Black History Month? You have probably a packed schedule and everything, but what are you looking forward to and excited about?
Yeah, I got a packed schedule of speaking engagements for the rest of the year, rest of the month. So I'm really excited about that. Getting in front of more kids. It had been a while since I spoke to children. I'd be speaking to a lot of adults and corporations and stuff, but which is good. But I'm looking forward to getting in front of more children. So I got a couple of those in the pipeline. I'm speaking to my high school, I think next week, which is going to be a really cool. I went to a Catholic school, all white Catholic school. I was actually the only Black person to graduate in my class.
That's crazy, yo.
Yeah, surprising, right? I'm gonna go blaze the scene up in there though, like get in the business. So I'm actually looking forward to that. But they want it, you know. I found that a lot of white people aren't afraid of the truth. You know, some of them are trying to bury it, but a lot of them understand that the missing pages of world history is Black history. So, and they want their children to know it, because it endears you to a people. You know, right now we're just pimps and thugs and, you know, athletes and entertainers on the planet and problems. But that's because we've been systematically written out of the history. And a lot of white people actually recognize that, and they don't want their children to operate that way. They want them, like literally like a good segment, I'll say 10-12% of our buyers are white women. You know, because they want to buy for their children because they want them to know. They don't get the information anywhere. So I actually appreciate those people, and I appreciate my school for allowing me to come back and talk, you know, even though I'm as radicalized as I am. But if you want the truth, that's all I'm coming with. I ain't coming with no flowers and rainbows. I'm going to tell the truth. You don't like this critical race theory, you better not call me in, because all I got is the truth, brother. You know, it stands naked, unafraid. So
do you think like all that happened in 2020 kind of changed those patterns? Like how was 2020 for you personally?
Yeah, I definitely. It changed. It woke up a lot of complacent white people and complacent Black people, right? And that bourgeoisie, you know, and all of that stuff. It woke a lot of people up. And we still riding the wave, and we talk about it inside the company. I'm like, man, we better get it while the getting is good, because you don't know when this wave go in, and then they're going to be on to the next thing, right? So I feel like we better push through reparations as fast as we can while this is hot, because they're gonna turn their attention and be like, that was 2020. We're not talking about that no more. So, but I definitely think it was a good shift in consciousness. I just don't think I'm not overly optimistic that it's going to last, you know, because just based on America's history and past, yeah, it's not going to last. This is a moment in time. So we got to take advantage of it while it's here.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Man, thank you so much for joining us, man. This has been really fun.
Super fun.
Yeah, I appreciate it, brothers. This was dope, man. This was super dope. I love what y'all doing, man.
Thank you so much for listening to another episode of the Real Ballers Read podcast. Be sure to check out Freddie Taylor's site, urbanintellectuals.com, to check out his Black History flashcards of all types. Also, if you're on Spotify or on Apple Music, leave a review of the podcast to let us know what you think. Thanks again, and have a great rest of your day. We'll catch you next time.